Accession number 30418, Mr. Eric Greg Robery, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Robery?
I was born in Wavertree, Liverpool.
What was the date?
On the 9th of May, 1925.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background, you know, your parents, what they'd done, whether in the war, that kind of thing?
Yes. My father was in the First World War for the later stages. He saw action at Passchendaele, where he was wounded, had a shrapnel wound, and suffered from a gas attack. But he survived that and got back to the village where he lived, where he was born, which was Woolton in Liverpool, and worked as a plumber.
Now, had the war left its mark on him in the sense that
yes,
it physically or mentally?
It did leave its mark on him. And my uncle, his elder brother, my Uncle Bert, who was in the First World War a couple of years before my father, as a driver, an ambulance driver, in the Army Service Corps, as it was in those days. My father was just an infantryman in the Royal Welsh Fusiliers. And they were very bitter about the way they were treated when they got back into civilian life.
Now, in what way? Can you explain that a bit more?
It was approaching the Depression. The Depression years. Work was hard to come by. Pensions weren't very good. War pensions, I don't think there were any. And they had a real struggle. When I was born, from the age of 4, my memories were of my grandparents' house in Woolton, where we as children, myself and my sister, used to love to get up there, where all the family used to gather. Usually we were there on a Sunday for lunch. My Uncle Bert, who was in the war with my father, travelled from North Wales, Wrexham, where he was working. And it was a jolly good get-together. And that flavoured my whole life from then on. I've never had anything, well, I have. It seems I've never had anything as good as that. No problems. Lots of relations. But then, of course, you get older. And my father managed to stay in work all through the Depression years.
As a plumber?
As a plumber. And we got a new council house on a new estate, a place called Allerton. And a very nice house, very clean and tidy, and everybody was moving in, and it was a good atmosphere, you know, community atmosphere.
How many in the family? Just you or more?
Myself and my sister. Well, first just me. And then my sister. And we went to the new infant and junior school that was built on the estate. Very nice school. It was called Springwood School, Gilmore.
How did you do at school?
I did very well. Both myself and my sister passed. Wasn't called the 11 plus in those days, the scholarship examination. And we both went to what were classed as secondary schools then. We'd never heard the term grammar school in those days. You either went to, when you went to senior level, it was either an elementary school or a secondary school. you're either doing elementary senior education or secondary education. If you went to an elementary school, you didn't do languages or anything like that. You're training to be a hewer of wood or drawer of water sort of thing. But the secondary schools produced, teachers and doctors and the professional people.
So how did you do there?
Quite well, but the war mucked things up for me. In 1939, in the August, war was imminent, and the country was ready for evacuation of children, school children, to country areas. My uncle Bert, I was telling you about, who's in the Ace Army Service Corps, he was through for the weekend and down at our house in Allerton, and he was going back the Sunday evening. He's going back to his place at Wrexham, and he said to my father, would you like me to take the kids back with me? As I say, they're waiting for evacuation. Some children had been evacuated already. And so my sister and I went back.
So this would be August, just before the
that
war?
That would be August, yes. I think around about August the 14th or something like that. We were in the middle of our school holidays. He took us back to his place at Wrexham, and my sister was there for just a few weeks, because my father had then managed to get her placed with her school, her secondary school, and their children were at Llangollen, not far away from Wrexham, just 11 miles down the road. So she was with her own school friends there, and the teachers who went with them. I could not go with my school, who were at Ruthin, R-U-T-H-I-N, a bit further away, because for some reason or other, I wasn't eligible for official evacuation. Because my school was not in a danger area, and I should have gone back to Allerton and gone to school with the skeleton staff, just the people who weren't eligible for official evacuation. But my father wouldn't have that, because it meant me travelling through the most dangerous part of the city to get to my school. So I went part-time education for a few months.
In Wrexham.
There was a school, an Allerton school called Quarrybank Boys Secondary School. They were evacuated to Wrexham. And I was able to get placed with them, but we only did half day education, because there wasn't room. The local children did half a day and we did half a day. They used to switch around. Some days it was a morning, some it was an afternoon, and I spent the next few months of the war. We came home the following Easter, because it was the phony war, and I came home.
Anything happened while you were there? I mean, what was it like living at your uncle's? Did you enjoy it? I mean,
oh, yes. He was our favourite uncle. Well, he was the only one we used to see over here. The rest of them were in America. I've got a large American family. We quite enjoyed it there. But my sister was at Llangollen and I was at Wrexham. Used to go down and visit her at weekends. or my father would come through and visit us both and take me down and bring me back. But I wasn't receiving full schooling at the time.
And that disrupted your education?
Yes. I quite enjoyed it with my uncle because he was... he worked for the Great Western Railway as a delivery man. You know, drove the parcel wagons, the stuff that came in to him by train, going around all the villages and all the rest of it. And I used to travel with him, you know, some days. I thought that was great. But, as I say, it was the phony war, and the following, around about March or April, it was Easter time, where we both came back home, both my sister and I. My sister went back to her school, and I didn't go back to mine. I was coming up to 15, and it was going to be my final year. And there was just a skeleton staff at my school, right through the town. And I don't think my father was keen on me travelling all the way, as I say, through the city and dangerous parts, which were heavily bombed later on. So I got a job.
What did you do as a job? What was your job?
I was a customs clerk for the Royal Netherlands Steamship Company, or at least one of their agents, Brown Gewijk, Dutch agents.
So you started that in 1940. What exactly did the job entail? What were you actually doing?
Well, I was seeing to consular declarations and getting them. I had to visit different consuls in the area. It was at the time when Germany had overrun the Netherlands, and it was after Pearl Harbor, and the war in the Far East had started, and the Dutch people had many interests in the Dutch East Indies and the Dutch West Indies. A lot of their vessels were at sea when the Japanese war broke out, you know, after Pearl Harbor. And those ships had been bringing supplies in to England, mainly to Liverpool. That all had to cease. And the Dutch fleet, the merchant fleet that was in the Far East, still at sea, came to Liverpool. That was their base. And they carried on trading with the Dutch West Indies. And that's what I was doing. They were sailing to the West Indies, bringing supplies back across the Atlantic because the Atlantic war was on, going into warehouses, bonded warehouses, all sorts of goods, foodstuffs, spirits, anything you could name. They were coming from the West Indies, Venezuela and all those places. And I had to keep an account of the cargoes of these ships. I had to go down, visit the ships, visit the captains on the ships, and get the bills of lading and know which warehouses it was going into, whether it was bonded or not, and keep a track of those. And those goods were held in reserve for supplying Dutch merchant ships coming into Liverpool and, you know, unloading their cargoes and then getting stocked up for another end of the journey. It was most interesting.
You enjoyed the work?
Oh, I did. Really did. I did that for about 3 years. At the same time, I'd already joined the air training corps.
I'll come to that. Now, what about air raid precautions? Did you have any kind of shelter, either in your house or...?
Yes, we had an Anderson shelter in the garden.
Now, tell me about that. Who put it up?
Can't remember.
You didn't do it yourselves, then?
No.
So what was it like?
No. The local council workmen came round, and we we had to dig a hole so deep and so wide. And neighbours used to help each other out. We had a big garden at our council house in Allen. And we dug it out, and they came and put up the shelter, just, you know, corrugated iron, front door on and all the rest of it. And that was it.
What was it like in there?
Well, it was the way you made it. I managed to get... It was an earth floor, cold and damp mainly. There were two bunk beds, one bunk bed either side, so it would house four people. We had dug it a little bit deeper than what we needed, because we thought the further down it is, you know, the safer it will be. And we managed to get some building planks, not exactly sleepers, but you know, the one thing plasterers use on scaffolding, you know, nearly an inch thick and so on. We managed to secure some of these. I don't know from where. Skip over that. but we found that if we cut them exactly in half, it was the exact width of the base of the of the shelter.
When
we fitted these in, we had a good solid floor.
And it didn't flood, because a lot of them flooded.
Yeah. And at the top of the shelter was piled earth, you know, grass sods out of the lawn and piles of earth all over. And we did that, and I remember helping friends of mine, you know, to do the same in their gardens. Everybody moved in and made them as comfortable as they could.
Now, what about when the raid started?
Well, the first raid that we experienced in Liverpool was in 1940, in the May. And that was horrific. We as a family, my father, my sister and I, I'm not mentioning my mother at this stage because there was a separation between them both. So there was my father at home, and he'd taken myself and my sister to Hoy Lake for the day. Beautiful day on the beach.
Hoy Lake.
We had a lovely day on the beach. When we got back to Liverpool, we had to travel by Cheshire Lines Railway, which was a tunnel under the Mersey, and it came up at the bottom of Bold Street in Liverpool. While we'd been travelling under the Mersey, there was an air raid started. And we got out of the train at Liverpool Central Station, and they wouldn't let us out of the underground. At the top of the steps, the corrugated iron, like, you know, iron gates were shut. We weren't allowed to go out. So we sat on the steps waiting and waiting. And eventually the all clear sounded, and we came up, crossed the road waiting for a tram car. And
what could you see when you came up? Was it a lot of damage or?
Yes. Fire engines flashing all over the place. And the custom house was ablaze. And I used the custom house quite a lot in my work with the shipping company. That was entirely destroyed. And people were jostling for tram cars, and the raid was still going on, or second wave of it. There was ACAC fire up in the sky. We could see the shells bursting, and people were desperate to get transport out of the city. We were waiting for a tram car, a lot of people struggling to get on. And my sister was being rushed forward, my father, so to get her onto the tram car. And then a fire engine came flying around the corner, and my father pulled her back just in time. It was that sort of chaotic situation. But we got the tram car back to... No, sorry, we didn't. It was pointless us trying to get on the tram car. But the all clear had gone, and they'd opened the gates at the top of the steps down to the underground. We went back down down to the train and got a train out to Allerton, which was 7 miles out of the city. And we had a walk up home from there, and as we were walking up, we could see the AK-AK fired in the distance and hear the guns. The raid was still going on, second wave of it. That was my first experience.
I should have asked, did you have a blackout in your... Well, you did, but tell me about that. How did your mother... your father organise it, sorry.
Well, we had... The windows had to be blacked out. We had, canvas sacking that had been opened up and stitched, it didn't look too bad, hung up at the windows. That was the first blackout we had. Eventually, we had frames made with the... that you could put up here and draw the curtains.
And you were quite... What was it like on the streets when it was, when you were out in the blackout?
Pitch black. Pitch black. you got used to it. I mean, you never went far at night. And it was always an area you knew. For us as kids, it was, anyway.
Now, what about the next set of raids? Because there's a lot of raids on the pull, aren't there?
Yes, well, the next raid is 41.
So there's quite a gap then.
Yeah. Well, even after the first raid, I had great difficulty getting into work. I had to get two tram cars into our office in Liverpool. It was just at the top of Pierhead, St. James's Street, and had quite a lot of difficulty getting in. Sometimes the trams would go so far you'd have to get out and walk the rest, maybe through piles of rubble or streets strewn with rubble, get another tram car and eventually arrive at the office. And then the city itself was badly devastated.
This is in the 41 raid?
It was worse in the 41 raids, yes. There was a bit of it in the 1940 raid. But 41, I could not get in after the first of the 1941 raids. I could not get into town from where we lived at Allerton. I could get a tram car as far as Penny Lane, which was only a couple of miles, 3 miles up the road from where we were. One morning I managed to do this. I got a tram car to Penny Lane, and then I just couldn't get any further. And I rang up my office and said to the boss, "I'm sorry, I'm going to be late. I don't know when I will be able to get in." And he said, "Don't worry." He says, "Don't bother coming in. Go back home," which I did.
And what were the raids like in 41? I think that's the Liverpool Blitz. How bad was it?
Oh, there were hardly two stones standing on one another. During the second raid, the second series of raids, I should say, the city was becoming more and more decimated. More and more of it was missing. And in one of the raids, our office, which was at the top of Castle Street, was destroyed. I got in and went to the office in a heap of rubble. And the boss was there, and he said, "Look, this is no good. Go back home. I'll get in touch with you. We are going to move the office to our parent company, the Royal Netherlands Steamship Company, which was at the other end of Castle Street." And that was still in being. And that's what happened. I was there for the rest of the time. I was a civilian before I had joined the RAF. That was over 2 years, nearly 3 years.
Any rage on Allerton itself?
No, but there were stray bombs fell. There were one or two purposeful raids on the southern docks at Garston, which wasn't far away from us. We did have a landmine dropped not far from where we lived, but didn't explode, so it exploded. So there was always that fear, you know, that, I mean, you can say anywhere around Liverpool, Manchester, you know, places along the Mersey, and we lit at Allerton, we were practically on the way. We were less than 2 miles away from Speke Airport, which is where a lot of factories were being built to assemble aircraft that were coming in crates from the USA. They were put together like Lockheed Lightnings and P-47s and all this sort of thing. They were manufactured in the States and shipped across in crates rather than being flown across, and they were assembled there.
Now, so no particular close escapes for you then?
No.
You were lucky.
The worst one was that first one, the 1940 Blitz, when we were coming back from the seaside.
Did it make you nervous? I mean, you know, I presume it did, but I mean, how did you feel during the bombing?
Well, I used to go into work every day. I always had a bit further to walk through the town. And I was walking past piles of rubble and this awful smell, cordite and carbon, fiery smell. Lots of machines working away, still trying to clear the place up. And hearing reports of the number of people that were probably still, you know, had been killed and still lying underneath shelters, the big brick shelters that had taken direct hits. This all affected you. You couldn't get over the horror of it all. It brought it home to you. You know, I'd been, if I can only get into the RAF, I want to fly. That was my only...
What about the? You joined the ATC. Tell me why the ATC and how you went about that.
I had been in the Boy Scouts. I enjoyed those.
Ah, well, let's do the Boy Scouts first then.
Yes.
Tell us about your activities.
I was in the Boy Scouts from the age of 10, which was the journey. I'd been in the Wolf Cubs before then. Thoroughly enjoyed
the. What kind of stuff did you do in the Boy Scouts? How military was it?
No, it wasn't military at all, and that's another story. My father was quite happy for me to be in the Boy Scouts because they weren't military, you know. We had to tie knots and light fires and all the rest of it. We used to go to camps, and I did quite enjoyed it. I was never away from the countryside, whatever I could get.
So you'd done that. And when did you stop being in the Scouts?
Well, when I was 14.
So 1939.
Yes.
So
before I went to Wrexham, before the unofficial evacuation, I joined the Scouts because I joined the ATC because I was able to, being 14 then. I joined them because I'd always been interested in aircraft, and I'd seen the development of aviation at Speke Airport when I was much younger, 9 and 10 years old,